not being able to legally marry. Instead, focus on what you can have. A true long-term commitment. Love Bites, a female vampire's guide to less destructive relationships. I could smell that Jolene was pregnant. A new, soft, green sort of scent that hit me the moment she opened the creaking trailer door. I put on my ignoring my surroundings smile, the one that said, I do not see the huge streaks of rust lapping down the pink wall panels or the carpeting that may be astroturf. Zeb was overseeing a PTA meeting that night and had asked me to check in on his bride. She'd missed me, he said, and was a little put out that it had taken me 3 days to make it over to their place. Fortunately, I was carrying 2 recently reheated pot pies to win my way back into her good graces. Hey! She beamed until she saw what I was holding.
Oh, no.
What? Jolene loved Mama's pot pies. For the last year, they were the only thing that kept her enormous appetite at bay when she visited my house. Since she and Zeb became my neighbors, I brought them over regularly for Jolene to snack on. And now, the mere presence of my foil-wrapped gift seemed to be turning Jolene a delightful shade of blah.
I'll be fine, she whimpered. I'm just a little sensitive to smells right now. Hormones combined with werewolf nose make it so much worse. Zeb was browning hamburger the other night, and I had to run out of the room to throw up twice. And I can't eat the foods I usually love. I couldn't get enough of your mama's pot pies a few months ago, and now just the thought of breaking the crust.
Jolene took a deep breath and pursed her lips. I'll leave it outside, I said. You sit down. I went to the kitchen and managed to smack myself in the face with a half-attached cupboard door while I poured Jolene a glass of water. The trailer was snug, to say the least. The kitchen was what Jolene's mother Mimi called a two-butt model, meaning no more than 2 butts could fit side by side between the stained faux wood grain counters at any one time. You're out of saltines, so I grabbed some Ritz crackers, I said.
Thanks,
she said, the color of her cheeks returning ever so slightly as she opened the wax paper tube.
So, how was your trip?
I launched into what was now the standard, heavily edited description. Lovely hotels, rude people, beautiful museums. Jolene paused mid-chew and clapped a hand over her mouth. With an,
oh, God!
She ran for the bathroom door and retched pitifully. Like a doofus, I followed her into the tiny bathroom. Are you okay? I pressed my hand over my nose as Jolene's sick smell smacked me in the face. This is as close to pregnancy as I ever want to get. I handed her the water glass. I thought morning sickness was just supposed to be, well, in the morning.
My ass! It's around-the-clock no-warning sickness, she wheezed. One minute, I'm a perfectly fine, functioning human being, and the next, I'm tossing up everything I've ever eaten.
And that's saying something, I marveled. She glared at me. Not helping. Sorry.
I threw up in the parking lot at the Piggly Wiggly the other day. I had to tell Biddy Tate I was pregnant because I didn't want her telling everybody I've got a drinking problem. Everything makes me sick. I ate a salad the other day. A salad. Without any meat at all. I'm gonna waste away to nothing.
I eyed her belly paunch, which made her look about 4 months along in human terms. I wouldn't worry about that. She glared up at me.
I'm gonna hit you, just as soon as I could stand up.
Fair warning.
I'm so miserable, she said, tears welling up in her eyes. And I should be grateful that we made a baby so easily. Some mixed couples can't, you know. And I can't complain to my mama, because she'll camp out here in the living room and refuse to leave until the baby's in college. And I can't complain to Zeb, because he gets this weird, frightened rabbit look in his eyes if I imply that I'm anything but 100% awesome. I'm glad you're here, Jane.
Well, you look great, I told her, pushing her hair back from her sweaty forehead. And it was true, in an infuriating way. Even the sweaty glow and water retention of early pregnancy only bumped Jolene down to what would be considered gorgeous for most humans. It just wasn't fair to the 4 billion or so other women on the planet. My only consolation was that eating a Ritz cracker had just made her throw up. "So, how's your family?" I asked, helping her back into her chair.
"Well, Mama's overjoyed. Calls me 6 or 7 times a day. She says hi, by the way. Daddy's sort of torn between pride and the horror of knowing what his little girl's been up to. I think up until now, he'd been telling himself that Zeb and I were sleeping in bunk beds. My cousins are sort of holding their breath, I think, because they know my aunts are going to make a huge fuss because it's my first baby. And my cousin Vance has run away with a carnival."
I shuddered, picturing the none-too-bright cousin with unnatural feelings for Jolene operating a tilt-a-whirl. "Is this one of those things where I hope that you're kidding but assume that you're not?" She nodded. I tried to use a nonchalant tone as I asked, "How are you and Zeb doing?" She sighed again.
"Weird. He's so quiet. He's never quiet except for when, you know, under a whammy. Oh, man, you don't think Mama Ginger scrambled his brain again, do you?"
"No. You know what I think?"
"Obviously not, or we wouldn't be having this conversation," she muttered.
"I think Zeb's just scared. Scared of growing up, scared of not being able to take care of you and the litter." Jolene got it together enough to smack my arm. I winced, glad that bruises didn't last long on me. "Okay. Think about what happens to married people with children in Zeb's family. They end up drunk and angry and living in matching trailers in their relatives' backyards. He's terrified of ending up like Mama Ginger and Floyd. I think he convinced himself that he could handle the transition to husband pretty well, but what I will only refer to as his spontaneity and your super-absorbent eggs came back to bite both of you on the butt."
"What do I do?"
"Stop putting ketchup on your egg rolls, for one thing. That's gross. And maybe your family could spend less time rearranging your cabinets. Other than that, hell, I've never been married or pregnant. What do I know?" She huffed.
"Well, you're a big help."
"I do what I can. Or don't, as the case may be. Now tell me, how's Mama Ginger? Is she still all skittish and sorry? Or has she returned to her deranged yet strangely effective ways?"
"No, thank the Lord."
Jolene rolled her eyes.
"She seems to feel just bad enough to stick to snippy comments when Zeb's not around and then pretending not to know why I'm upset."
My brows lifted. "Comments about?"
"About having everything handed to me. How it must be nice to have a family that will give you a trailer, friends that will give you land and money to build a house. About how I need to cut the apron strings and stop letting my family boss me around. I guess because she wants to be the one bossing me around. Then she'll start making suggestions on how I could make her son happier. And then I just mention how you might be dropping by, and she gets really quiet."
"She knew I was out of the country, right?" I asked. Jolene nodded. "Well, it's not as if I can teleport home."
"She doesn't know that."
"Have you told Mama Ginger about the baby yet?"
"No,"
she said emphatically.
"I was thinking we would wait for the baby to be a year old or so, maybe in kindergarten."
"That's not unwise," I said, picturing what Mama Ginger might consider appropriate boundaries and advice for an expectant mother. "So how does this whole werewolf pregnancy work? Zeb already told me about the shorter gestation thing. But what else is different? I mean, can you still transform? Are werewolf babies born able to transform? Do you give birth in a big cardboard box with towels in it?"
"That's not funny,"
Jolene said, glaring at me. I held up my thumb and forefinger, measuring a little bit funny.
"I can phase for about another month. After that, it can be stressful for me and the baby,"
she said, rubbing her belly.
"Pups can't phase until they're at least 5. Their little bodies can't handle it until then. Mama always said it was God's way of keeping them from running off and never being seen again," she said. "I'm going to have a perfectly normal human birth with a perfectly normal baby. And even though the women in my pack have given birth at home for the last 20 generations, I'll be giving birth in a hospital. Zeb's sort of insistent on it. I think the idea of not having doctors, expensive machines, and high-test drugs, for him, not me, makes him a little panicky."
"Well, you can't really blame him."
"Oh, no. I'm sort of relieved to have an excuse to go to a hospital," she admitted. "I've always hated attending the births on the farm. I mean, I know I don't exactly have modesty issues, but The idea of being laid out like that and, you know, all that stuff coming out while my aunts and cousins come running in and out of the room, taking pictures and smoking and describing their own horrible births. No, thank you. Mama's a little disappointed, and I think it hurts the aunts' feelings. But to be honest, I think everybody else is sort of interested in what it's going to be like to wait around in the hospital for a baby. It will be a McLean family first.
But what about prenatal care? Ultrasounds? Won't a doctor notice that you gave birth to a full-term baby 4 months early?
There's a midwife in town who's been taking care of the family for years. She helps with the births and prenatal care. She helps us fake the medical records and the birth certificates so they appear normal. The humans will just assume I was pregnant before the wedding, which I can live with, she said, toying with her glass. But I have a favor to ask you.
If this involves the words birthing coach, my answer is I'm touched, but no thank you, I told her.
No, she laughed. I was hoping you would come be there at the hospital as sort of a referee slash bouncer, keep my family from invading the labor room and Zeb's family from killing each other.
And I don't have to see anything or hear anything or, again, see anything?
Nope.
Then I'm your girl. I should have suspected something was wrong with the Half Moon Hollow Chamber of Commerce as soon as I saw the chamber seal was pink. It had been a while since I'd attended a chamber meeting, 10 years, to be exact, since I was awarded a $1,500 Chamber of Commerce Good Citizen Scholarship for writing an essay on patriotism, what living in Half Moon Hollow means to me. It was May 1995. I was a senior. I was $1,000 short on tuition and faced living at home and attending the local community college. I would have written it in limerick form if they'd asked. That dinner was unremarkable, the main difference being that the chamber seal was still navy blue and gold. I was served bland chicken while the chamber president gave a speech on the perils of youth and supporting good, decent young people where they could find them. I was handed a check and dismissed, so the chamber could discuss the possibility of attracting a rubber band manufacturer to the hollow. The present-day chamber office had moved to a swankier part of downtown, to a restored Victorian townhouse with a dizzying amount of gingerbread. With the pink and white seal proudly presented on the lawn, the place looked more like a sorority house than the place where our community's collective business interests met. To be honest, joining the chamber was sort of a test. Reopening the shop and trying to attract a larger clientele meant I was going to have to face the living public with much more regularity. I'd managed to operate on the fringes of polite society for the past year or so, and frankly, I had no confidence that I wasn't going to get staked by a random customer in a disagreement over a senior discount. I wanted to see if I could move among humans again. Plus, it was important for specialty books to shed its obscurity and enter the mainstream business community. Too many Hollow residents had no idea what or where we were. Andrea and I wanted to be the sort of establishment that welcomed all beings, dead or undead, and their money. Joining the chamber was the first step in becoming legitimate. I was greeted at the door by a wall of high-pitched chatter. All around me, slender blonde women in knockoff designer suits sipped wine spritzers and swished their hair back and forth in slow motion. A few of the braver, thinner souls were wearing suit jackets paired with capris, which to me has always seemed like the professional equivalent to wearing hot pants to the office. But on these girls, it looked fashion-forward. They were all so shiny. The last time I was around this much pink, it belonged to Missy Houston, the vampire real estate agent who tried to frame me for murder, steal my house, and kill me. I shook through my color phobia and built up whatever psychic defenses I could muster against the waves of rampant thoughts. It was like having a really insecure mosquito buzzing around the surface of my brain. Given the just-flew-in-from-the-tanning-bed glow most of the girls were sporting, I was absolutely sure I was the only vampire in the building. And somehow, I didn't think it would be a good time to bring it up. The floor was highly polished and very old. I felt my own sensible flat slip across the polished surface and wondered how these women negotiated it in those stilettos. I plucked at the conservative navy pantsuit I'd chosen in the hopes that it made me appear to be a serious businesswoman. Even with vampire hotness on my side, I felt a little dowdy. I checked to make sure that at the very least I'd worn matching shoes.
I decided to give it 3 minutes before I bolted from the building as if my eyebrows were on fire. There was a sign-up table offering "Hello, my name is" tags and pastel gel pens. But none of the other ladies was wearing one because, of course, they already knew one another. I snagged a copy of the meeting agenda from the refreshment table. It was printed on pink paper with brown polka dots, the kind you might buy from an extremely perky stationery store. That's when I realized there were no men anywhere. Not a single whiff of testosterone in the place. Had I accidentally stumbled into a man-eating coven? Was I going to be sacrificed as the ugly brunette? I decided that my 3-minute limit was up and made a dash toward the door, bumping into a willowy blonde as she poured another Chardonnay. She dropped the bottle, which I quickly snagged before it hit the carpet. "Fast hands," she said, tinkling out a laugh. "I'm lucky you caught that, or Courtney Ahern would have torn out my eyes for ruining the Persian rug. I'm Courtney Barrow. I own the unique boutique, the Sterling Silver Shop over on Dogwood." Courtney Barrow was just as cute as a button. She was tiny, curvy, and had an intricately braided silver necklace looped around her neck. Though my proximity to a substance I was highly allergic to made me somewhat nervous, Courtney Barrow was the only genuinely friendly face I'd seen that night, so I was sticking close to her. "Jane Jameson, Specialty Books." Her slick coral lips quirked. "Isn't that an adult store?" "No, no. There used to be an adult store next door, but we bought them out and expanded into their space. We pretty much gutted the store and started all over. You couldn't have used that space for anything else anyway. There was a lot of steam cleaning involved. I don't know when to stop talking sometimes." Courtney was unfazed by my babbling. "A bookstore? That's so interesting. What made you go into the book business, Jane?" "I was too tall to be a ballerina," I offered. Courtney giggled. "You're a hoot. Oh, you just have to meet Courtney Harris. She'd love you." "All right, then," I said as she wound her arm through mine. "Wait, she's named Courtney, too? How many Courtneys are there here?"
12,
Courtney sighed as she led me deeper into the crowd of shimmering Courtneys. I was introduced to Courtney Gordon, who had started an event planning company for children's birthday parties, and Courtney Stevenson, who ran a specialty shop for baby bed linens. None of them seemed even remotely interested in my bookshop, and, to be honest, I couldn't figure out how I would cross-promote occult items with luxury crib sheets. I was starting to think I'd made a huge mistake joining the chamber. I wondered if Courtney Barrow would release me voluntarily, or if I would have to gnaw off my arm like a coyote stuck in a trap.
"It was so confusing when we all joined at once. We didn't want to call each other Courtney H, Courtney B, Courtney G. This isn't second grade, you know?"
I smiled and nodded because there was no derailing this chick's train of thought. "So, we tried nicknames. Short Courtney, Blonde Courtney, Cankles Courtney. But some of the girls' feelings were hurt, so we ended up having to use Courtney H, Courtney B, Courtney G anyway.
We still use Cankles Courtney, but only behind her back."
"Oh, I know that sounds mean," Courtney conceded. "But trust me, you'll know her when you see her." Okay, it was mean, but I did recognize Cankles Courtney right away. Sadly lacking in lower quadrant definition, she was cowering before the formidable Courtney Herndon and receiving a stern talking to regarding the chamber newsletter's font style. Apparently, Cankle's version of curls wasn't curly enough.
"Courtney Herndon is the head Courtney," Courtney Barrow whispered. "She's been the chamber president for the last 4 years.
Did she just say head Courtney? There was a Courtney hierarchy?
"Courtney!"
my guide exclaimed. Several women throughout the room turned to us, realized we were referring to someone else, and went back to their wine. Courtney Herndon gave me an appraising look and a thin smile.
"This is Jane. She runs a bookstore where the porn shop used to be,"
Courtney Barrow squealed.
"Isn't that interesting?"
"Super," Courtney Herndon said, though her voice gave the distinct impression that she couldn't give a rat's ass.
"Are you from the Hollow originally, or are you a transplant like us?"
Courtney Barrow asked. "I'm a native," I said. "What do you mean, transplant?" "Oh, well, we all married boys from the Hollow," Courtney Herndon snorted derisively as though she did not appreciate being uprooted. Courtney Barrow smiled fondly, ignoring Courtney Herndon, as she said,
"My husband, Gary, told me he couldn't imagine living anywhere else, so I just followed him home. Same with all of the Courtneys. None of us really has to work, but we're self-starters, except for Lisa over there."
Courtney lowered her voice and nodded toward a strawberry blonde in a suit even more conservative than mine. "She runs her family's accounting firm."
"Well, that explains why I've never met most of you."
I turned to Courtney Herndon.
"Courtney, what do you do?"
Courtney Herndon stroked back a stray blonde curl. "I do home demonstrations for women interested in cosmetic products. I do home parties, makeovers, special kits." I nodded. "So it's like Mary Kay?"
Courtney H.'s jaw twitched as she hissed out, "No, it's nothing like Mary Kay."
She turned on her ice-pick heels and stomped toward the wine table.
"All right, then." "Mary Kay asked Courtney H. to resign because her sales tactics were too aggressive," Courtney Barrow whispered, a conspiratorial grin tilting her lips. "She would point out a flaw and then recommend a product to fix it. Only Courtney can be really, really honest sometimes. And some customers complained, so Courtney sent the customers letters to tell them why they were wrong, and then Mary Kay's corporate offices filed the restraining order."
I stifled a laugh.
"Who's she working for now?" "She says she's an independent contractor."
"So she's mixing up her own makeup in her basement?"
"Given the restraining order, that can't be."
Courtney Barrow lowered her voice even more. "Even with vampire hearing, I'm sort of surprised I could hear her."
"She's still selling the Mary Kay stuff. She had loads of it when she quit. You know, your upline always tells you that you can't sell from an empty wagon. Well, she took it seriously. She has enough lip plumper to sink a cruise ship. She just takes off all the packaging and replaces it with her own stickers she prints at home."
"That is both brilliant and deranged," I whispered back. Courtney Barrow giggled again, which was becoming less annoying. She nodded to a tense blonde in the corner who seemed to be scanning the room over and over, searching for some sort of infraction.
"That's Courtney Ahern, the one who's crazy about the carpet. This house used to belong to one of her in-laws, but she persuaded her husband to give the tenants the boot and renovate the place for our headquarters. But now she's paranoid one of us will do something to ruin the house's potential resale value."
"What does Courtney A do?" I asked.
"Sell something that's nothing like Amway?"
Courtney Barrow guffawed.
"I'm going to like you."
"Oh, good." Courtney Herndon stood, cleared her throat, and silenced the room. The various Courtneys filed into the meeting room, where we were directed to cozy tea chairs instead of the usual folding monstrosities. I sat through the approval of the minutes, the agenda, and the pledge. I came up with my own identification system for the Courtneys as they debated the proper color scheme for the annual business directory. Courtney Barrow, the only one who'd bothered to be friendly, was Nice Courtney. Courtney Herndon was Head Courtney. Courtney Gordon, who appeared to be some sort of sycophantic enforcer, was Toady Courtney. Courtney Ahern was Coaster Courtney. I couldn't come up with a better-fitting nickname for Cankles Courtney and felt a little bad about it. I moved on to picking which chamber member I would eat first if we were stuck on a desert island. I settled on Courtney Jensen, or Fitness Courtney, because it was obvious that woman hadn't seen a carb in years, and high-protein diets give blood a rich, oaky finish. I'd almost nodded off when I heard my name being called.
"What?"
I almost shouted, bolting upright in my fancy laced chair.
"It is Jane, right?"
Head Courtney demanded. "You're the new member?" Head Courtney's smile tightened as the other ladies tittered. "We were just discussing the fall festival charity for the animal shelter." This was so much worse than being caught sleeping in math class. I nodded and slapped on my pleasant face. On my right, Nice Courtney sat frozen in her chair, a Stepford smile pasted on. "Now, Jane, I think it would be a great idea if you gathered together the prizes for the games. Normally, we solicit donated items from businesses in the community. And since you're new, you probably have all kinds of contacts that we haven't even thought of yet." Well, I could ask Dick about that trunkload of pirated Knight Rider DVDs I gave him the year before. So, we'll just put you down to head the prize committee.
It's just my first meeting, I said. I don't know if I'm qualified.
Head Courtney's eyes narrowed. There's no better way to get to know us better than just to throw yourself into the work. Really, it's the best way to make friends here at the Chamber, showing what a team player you can be. You do want us to think you're a team player, don't you?
Why wasn't my sister in this club? Seriously.
I'm willing to help with...
Great, Head Courtney cried, interrupting my attempt at shirking the games in favor of decorations or something less commitment-y.
Lisa will give you all of the information from last year. From across the room, Lisa rolled her eyes and shared a commiserating look with me. This was followed by a report from the Jack-o'-lantern committee and the treat committee, who lamented the lack of volunteers for making gluten-free snacks. I had never so earnestly wished that I could die of natural causes. Boredom was a natural cause, right? After the game committee and the inflatable committee, I wondered whether there was anyone in the room who was not on a committee. Now, the planning committee has come up with a list of acceptable costumes. I know some of you older members like to get started on your kids' costumes early. The oldest member in the room looked to be about 35, and she did not look as if she took that as a compliment. I raised my hand. So, wait, this is a Halloween party?
No. If we call it a Halloween party, some families won't come, so it's a fall festival.
But we're going to have pumpkins and costumes and candy.
Head Courtney glared down at me.
Is there going to be a problem, Jane?
There could be a problem. Believe it or not, vampires tend to hole up on All Hallows' Eve and refuse to come out until the last trick-or-treater has been dragged home kicking and screaming. You'd stay home, too, if you were confronted with a holiday that parades around the worst cultural stereotypes pertaining to your particular species. Bluish pallor, black capes, stupid accents exaggerated by clownish fangs, and presents it as all in good fun.
Right, sorry, I said. It's just that, is the Chamber really supposed to hold fundraisers? I asked. I thought the Chamber of Commerce was about community building and economic development. Bringing in new employers.
Well, this is the way we run the Chamber of Commerce, Head Courtney said through gritted teeth. The Half Moon Hollow Animal Shelter is a cause we've supported for years. Why, just last year we collected $5,000 in cash donations.
People will just give you cash for the shelter without a carnival?
Head Courtney's disapproving sneer was now an all-out death glare.
Right. Sorry. I mumbled, staring down into my lap as a sign of submission. For the rest of the meeting, I sat still and silent, just praying to get out alive. And I was incredibly angry with myself. Why the hell was I afraid of these women? If I wanted to, I could beat them all senseless, take their fancy foo-foo designer wallets and make them forget I ever did it. Not that I would ever do that. Chapter 4. The best way to show that you're independent is actually to be independent. Develop outside interests, attend cultural events, anything to show your wayward vampire mate that you are not sitting at home pining away. Love Bites, A Female Vampire's Guide to Less Destructive Relationships. I slunk up my front porch steps, exhausted and in serious need of sedatives and or lobotomy instruments. Andrea, on the other hand, looked cool and collected, stretched out on my porch swing, scratching my dog behind the ears, and sipping a tall, icy beverage that I promptly stole from her.
"Hey!" she cried. "I used your best liquor to make that, and there wasn't much to choose from."
"It's an emergency," I told her between swigs of what I think was a daiquiri.
Because of my sordid history with the demon alcohol and the inevitably humiliating results, I don't usually imbibe. But tonight, I was making an exception. I slumped onto the swing with Andrea and sighed. "Not that you're not welcome here at River Oaks, but has it occurred to you that making yourself frosty cocktails while I'm not home is breaking and entering?"
"Yes, it did. But I was thirsty and you left me your key ring to close up."
"I'm way too trusting. Am I going to come home one night and find you taking a bath in my tub and wearing my clothes?" She arched her eyebrow, looking from her own stylishly cut silk blouse and slacks to my suit, which had been purchased by my mother. Never mind.
I'm not going to go all single white female on you, but I do love this place. I still have a hard time believing you own a home with a name.
Well, for all of this, my sister is willing to sue me, steal from me, and have me audited, so you might want to reconsider your whole romantic image of gentility. Andrea sighed heavily.
Why must you destroy my illusions? How is your networking? She asked as I tried to beckon my dog.
Fitz sniffed and rested his head on his paws. I'm not trying to say anything about sisterhood or women in power, but what a bunch of bitches. Andrea laughed and pulled a pitcher of daiquiris from behind the porch swing. She poured herself another drink, grinning as she said,
I thought you might feel that way. My boss at the gift shop used to complain about the meetings.
You knew? I cried, chucking a cushion at her. You knew and you let me walk into that den of iniquity unprepared?
Hey, hey, if you can't respect the daiquiri, at least respect the shirt, she griped, swiping at the liquor I'd made her spill on her celery-colored blouse. I know better than to ask you to respect me.
I blew her a kiss and poured more daiquiri as Andrea began her tale in an ominous tone.
Margie said it happened slowly. One cold October night, a Courtney attended her first meeting, then another, and another. It was as if the chamber was a hive being invaded by really perky Africanized bees, and pretty soon they were proposing extra events and creating committees to run those events, and they built a power base. They elected themselves as officers, moved the headquarters, rewrote the bylaws, and made life miserable for the old-school members. One by one, the charter members all left. Margie quit after they gave her a demerit for wearing brown shoes with a black suit. To Margie, that translated to, "You're over 40. Get out."
What happened to all the men?
Andrea shrugged. I don't know. I guess they just quit. Or they got too many demerits.
I think the Courtneys ate them, I countered.
Your guess is there's some supernatural reason for the pink chamber seal?
I nodded. My guess? Coven of succubi.
Well, you should fit in well, being a vampire and all.
She narrowed her eyes at me.
You did tell them you're a vampire, right?
I sipped my drink to avoid answering.
I thought you said you weren't going to live in the coffin anymore, Andrea cried.
I'm not living in the coffin. I'm just not volunteering any information that wouldn't come up in an introductory conversation. Do you walk up to people and say, Hi, I'm Andrea, I'm a natural redhead?
I'm not a natural redhead.
I knew it!
Don't deflect the question. So I guess you're not going back, huh?
I have to, I mumbled. I'm in charge of the prizes for the charity carnival. Andrea hooted.
They pulled you in!
They did not.
They made you their prize bitch, and not in the dog show way. You might as well have given them all your milk money and then done their homework for them. I told you they're scary and blonde. We've established that I don't do well with scary blonde people. And you're starting to talk like me the more time we spend together. I think we can both agree that having one person in the world who talks like me is too many. Jane, maybe you could see this as an opportunity to grow as a person, to face your fears, to be a little less racked by insecurity. I am not racked by fear and insecurity. I have completely normal fears. Failure, clowns, spiders. What's weird about that? I groaned. Oh, who am I kidding? It's all gone pear-shaped. Andrea patted my head. No more kitchen nightmares for you. It's Gordon Ramsay. I can't help myself. All the yelling and the cursing. It's so forceful. And he takes off his shirt at least once every episode to change into a chef's uniform. She snorted. Freak. Look, I'm going to stick it out. I have to. Joining the chamber is good for the shop. It's going to be good for the shop. Please, God, let it be good for the shop. And at least we know that they'll let you quit if it's not the right place for you, or you exceed the maximum weight allowances. Andrea snickered. You know, maybe you'd be a little more confident if you jazzed up your wardrobe a bit.
I smirked. You're just looking for an excuse to take me on another humiliating shopping excursion.
Keep it up and I'll put you in a stylish poncho, she said, giving me a mock, evil glare.
I shuddered. Vampires should not wear ponchos. I made kissing noises and beckoned my dog. Come here, Fitz. Fitz yawned and scooched even further under the porch swing, nuzzling his head into Andrea's hand.
Traitor, I muttered.
Oh, you got a shipment at the shop. I put it on your hall table, she said, rising and dislodging Fitz's head from her knee.
Why didn't you just leave it at the shop? I asked, following her through the front door, pitcher in hand.
Well, I thought maybe you'd want these for yourself, she said, smirking, handing me the open box.
About a dozen books with blazing neon titles winked out at me. Forbidden Thirst, Blood Lust, Penetrating Fangs, The Misadventures of Millie, I read, thumbing through the slick paperbacks. This went way beyond the cover of your average bodice ripper. Let's just say more was being inserted than fangs.
I didn't order this. This is porn. Vampire porn, but porn all the same.
I think the publishers prefer the term erotica.
I shot Andrea my best withering glare. She shrugged, all wide, innocent eyes betrayed by her madly twitching lips.
Well, you said you were going to be lacking in sexual companionship. I thought maybe you decided to expand your horizons.
Your perception of me is disturbing, I shuddered. Is there a packing slip?
Hope you enjoy these samples. Let me know about ordering. Talk soon, Paul,
Andrea read aloud before showing me the innocent slip of white paper.
Who's Paul?
Paul Dupree, one of my suppliers in Atlanta. He specializes in vampire publishing. Normally, he sends me diet guides and self-help books.
Technically, that could be considered a form of self-help.
Andrea wriggled her eyebrows suggestively.
Ew, I'm leather-bound editions, not this.
Maybe he just got stuck on leather-bound, she said, cocking her head to get a better look at Millie,
who seemed more than thrilled to be tied up, hanging upside down, and leered at by a vampire with implausible pecs.
Did Dick give you a list of dirty quips? You're enjoying this way too much, she snorted.
I've seen some of the titles in your personal library. I don't think I would be too judgmental.
I'm not going to enter into a censorship debate with you. I have other things on my mind right now. Stop laughing, I cried when she collapsed onto a chair.
All I can say is thank goodness Gabriel's not here to see this. He'd probably go after Paul and rip his arms off for sending me this sort of thing, professional relationship or no. Or he'd just say, this porn stash is probably for the best, and gift me with a lifetime supply of batteries.
Andrea doubled over, laughing. I was glad someone could enjoy my pain.
The truth was, I didn't need any form of artificial stimulation. My body refused to believe that Gabriel and I were no longer together, unwilling to give up the orgasms he gave me, even if they had to be manufactured in my dreams. Every night I had vivid, full-color dreams of Gabriel, his body, his lips, that thing he used to do with his index finger. My cruel subconscious dredged up memories of real encounters, or provided elaborate scenarios, like the dream where Gabriel was a police officer and I had to use all my wiles and a lap dance to persuade him not to give me a speeding ticket. Or there were dreams where he just stalked into the house, threw me down on the kitchen table without a word, and took me. Each night, I woke up in the middle of a screaming, head-spinning orgasm and was brought crashing down when I realized that I was alone. I was caught between being afraid to go to sleep and wanting to go to bed hours too early. Finally recovered and rubbing at the stitch in her side, Andrea wiped her eyes. She sighed.
Still haven't heard from him?
Nope. She followed me into the kitchen, where I dropped the empty pitcher into the sink and pulled a faux type O out of the fridge.
And I'm caught in all that hellish, I want to call him, but I would rather he call me because that proves he wants to talk to me, limbo. When did my life become a tragic episode of felicity?
I don't know what that means.
It means that I feel like I'm waiting for that very special boy to call, only that very special boy isn't breathing. And he told me it was probably for the best that we part ways more than 3,000 miles from home, and he hasn't deemed it necessary to contact me in 2 weeks. Not even to make sure my plane didn't crash into the Atlantic. At this point, I'm not entirely sure he's not going to stay in Europe until he hears that I've moved away or become a nun or something. She patted my head fondly.
Well, next to being married, a girl likes to be crossed in love a little now and then. It is something to think of and gives her a sort of distinction among her companions.
My face softened into a smile. You read Pride and Prejudice. Andrea rolled her eyes.
Well, I figured if I'm going to survive working at the shop, I would have to.
And you only hinted that a person of any intelligence was required to read at least one Jane Austen book, like 1,000 times. I tapped a finger to my chin. That doesn't sound anything like me. It was 2 days from the reopening. The cash register drawer was stuck. We were missing a rather large shipment of what I considered our cornerstone product, the Guide for the Newly Undead. And I was beginning to suspect that Andrea was slipping extra espresso into her magical mystery coffee potions because caffeinated Jane amused her. The only thing we had going for us was a local dairy that was willing to deliver to an account as small as ours and to a location as bad as ours at night. In fact, it was a delight to come downstairs from Mr. Wainwright's old apartment to find a tall man in an indecently tight blue half-moon dairy uniform stocking our little coffee bar fridge with half-and-half and heavy cream. "Wow, is that our dairy guy?" I whispered. Andrea didn't bother removing her eyes from the sight of Dairy Guy's delicious blue-clad bottom swaying as he loaded the fridge.
"Yep," Andrea answered absently.
"He's going to be coming here regularly, right?" We simultaneously tilted our heads as Dairy Guy's hips changed angles. Andrea sighed.
"Yep.
Maybe we should arrange for Dick to be elsewhere on delivery nights," I whispered, "because you're drooling, and I don't blame you because milk does a body good." Oh, my God. My jaw dropped as Dairy Guy turned, and I recognized him as little Jamie Lanier, whom I used to babysit every summer. Jamie loomed 4 inches over my tall frame. His warm green eyes twinkled at me from under a faded blue ball cap he'd slapped over his wavy, dark blonde hair. Curse my weakness for all-American boys. Every inch of him was toned and tan, and he smelled like Irish Spring soap. I bit back a sigh. This was the danger of living in the small town where you grew up. Local hotties have to start off somewhere. And generally, it's as the annoying, toe-headed little leaguer who would only eat smiley-face pancakes from ages 5 to 7.
"Miss Jane, hi."
He flashed those devastating dimples.
"It's great to see you."
"Jamie, how's your mom?" I asked, flinching at his use of miss, a sure sign that he thought of me as a senior citizen. "Still teaching?"
"Yep. But she says she's going to retire now that I'm graduating, and she and Dad are going to have the house to themselves."
"You're graduating from college?" I said, an insane note of desperation in my voice as I tried to do the age math in my head.
"Actually, I'm still a senior at Half Moon Hollow High. I'm just working at night to save for tuition."
"Forgive me, Lord, I'm the biggest pervert in the world." "Say hi to your mom for me," I said as he packed up his hand truck and headed out the door. He waved at us from the delivery van as he pulled away. I stared at the ceiling, then told Andrea, "You may laugh now." She guffawed, collapsing against the bar as she held her side.
"I'm sorry. It's just the look on your face when he said he was graduating from high school."
I rubbed my hands over my face.
"My eyes, they burn. I can't believe I get to relive this humiliation with every delivery,"
Andrea said, rubbing her hands together in anticipatory glee.
"This is already my favorite job ever."
"I think you forget sometimes. I am fully capable of hurting you." We turned to the front door as a woman in a smart peach raincoat came into the shop, clutching her purse close to her side with one arm and carrying an enormous beribboned basket with the other. Courtney Barrows, nice Courtney, eyed her surroundings suspiciously, apparently afraid to touch anything.
"Courtney?"
I said.
"Jane."
She sighed, relieved to see me.
"And it isn't even my birthday."
Andrea was clearly thrilled that one of the chamber members had shown up for my brainwashing initiation so soon. She whispered,
"Which one?"
I cleared my throat. "Courtney Barrows, this is my associate, Andrea Byrne. Andrea, Courtney Barrows. Courtney owns the unique boutique, the Sterling Silver Shop over on Dogwood." "Nice to meet you," they chorused. I half expected Courtney to curtsy. "It's not that I'm not happy to see you again, but what are you doing here?" I asked. Courtney let out a breathy laugh.
"I know. I don't normally come into this part of town, especially at night, but your store hours are just so odd. I wanted to make sure I caught you, she said, hauling the giant gift basket onto the counter. The chamber sent you this, and I volunteered to bring it by. It's a welcome muffin basket. There's an orientation folder, a directory, the memory book, and a suggested list of places where you should go begging for game prizes. Well, that capped it. If I'd learned anything from Missy, the psycho real estate agent, it was never trust people bearing gift baskets.
Memory book?
Andrea asked. It's a little scrapbook for our special events, fundraisers, that sort of thing.
Like a yearbook?
Andrea exclaimed cheerily, then scowled when I pushed the basket at her with more force than was probably necessary. She stifled a giggle and took it to my office.
I'm taking these muffins, by the way. They're of no use to you.
Courtney shot me a questioning look. I smiled. I'm on a no-carb, no-sugar, no-gluten diet, but Andrea will love them. It was really nice of you to bring it by. You didn't have to come all the way down here.
Well, I just liked talking to you so much at the meeting, I thought I'd come by for a visit. I joined the chamber to make some friends. And the ladies at the chamber, I didn't know what I was getting into when I joined. They're sort of scary, I suggested.
And blonde? Andrea shouted from the back of the shop. I shot Courtney an apologetic smile, but she didn't seem offended in the least that I'd been talking about the chamber members behind their backs.
Yes, but you were so nice. You know, you're the first person I've met at one of those meetings that hasn't made fun of the fact that my husband runs a construction company. As if my money is dirty or something, just because my husband's not a doctor or a lawyer.
I was raised by a teacher and a meddlesome homemaker. I mock no one, I told her, then amended, unless they deserve it.
You've lived in the Hollow your whole life. You don't know what it's like to try to meet people here when you don't know anybody.
I think you've been hanging around the wrong Half Moon Hollow residence. See, I would imagine your husband probably out-earns 95% of the people in this town. Frankly, I admire anyone who can operate heavy machinery without hurting innocent bystanders. She giggled.
See? I told you. You're a hoot.
That you did. Pull up a seat. Courtney gave an exaggerated look around, her face open and pleasant as she climbed up onto the bar stool.
Your shop is, really interesting.
Thanks. Coffee? I asked. I pushed a bunch of buttons and hoped a cappuccino would come out. Andrea came running at the rumble of the cappuccino machine like a mama bear protecting her young. She shooed me away and finished making Courtney's drink herself. Courtney seemed almost shy as she handed me a little pink-wrapped box.
And I had a little gift made up for you.
Oh, thanks, I said, opening the box. Inside was a little keychain attached to a silver disc inscribed with my initials. That was really nice. Vampires are allergic to silver. Touching it feels like a combination of burning and being forced to watch glitter over and over again. Your eyes burn, there's an unpleasant squelching sound, and you're left with dirty gray streaks that are very hard to wash off. I knew what I was in for when I politely held the little circle in my palm. Andrea's eyes widened as my hand began to sizzle like bacon. I mouthed, "I know." Andrea started asking Courtney incredibly complicated questions about how she wanted her coffee. As soon as Courtney's back was turned, I put the keychain on the counter and silently yowled, shaking my hand back and forth as the dirty gray stain faded from my skin.
"You okay, Jane?"
Courtney asked, smiling sweetly. "Fine," I chuckled. Andrea rolled her eyes in my direction. "I'm just fine. I just have some allergies, a little eczema acting up." Wait, no, this is stupid. Courtney, you should probably know that I'm a vampire. Have been for about a year now. If that's going to get me banned from the Half Moon Hollow Chamber of Commerce, so be it. I just don't have the time or energy to try to fool you into thinking I'm normal.
Oh, I knew that,
Courtney said, patting my arm and turning over my burned hand to examine my palm.
The keychain was just a test to make sure, but it was obvious the other night what you were. You didn't touch any of the food. Your teeth are a little sharper than they should be. You're so pale and, well, sort of glowy. Your skin drove head Courtney crazy, by the way. She kept trying to figure out what you use on it. I didn't say a word.
My forehead wrinkled.
So what do you plan on doing with this information?
Nothing, she said, smiling pleasantly and sipping her coffee.
I'm confused, I told Andrea, who shrugged.
It's just, you're so much nicer than any of those so-called normal girls, she said, patting my hand. I figure if you're up front with me, you can't be all that bad. And personally, I want to see how long it takes the other girls to figure it out and how many different ways they manage to put their collective foot in their mouth.
You've got a bit of a dark streak in you, Andrea told her. My boyfriend's going to love you. On second thought, maybe I should keep you two separate.
Courtney giggled. Besides, I experimented a little with vampires in college. Every girl does. I arched my brows at her. You know I'm a completely straight vampire, right? Courtney threw her head back and laughed. She turned to Andrea.
Don't you just love hanging out with her? You never know what she's going to say.
Every day's an adventure, Andrea said dryly. Chapter 5. Remember to fight fair. No name-calling, no use of words like always and never, no bringing up old issues to avoid the topic at hand, and no dismembering. Love Bites, A Female Vampire's Guide to Less Destructive Relationships.
Are you sure the whole pewter figurine thing isn't too kitschy?
I repositioned the graceful fairy statues near our selection of amethyst geodes, which I'd moved because I wanted to make room for a display of the guide for the newly undead next to the register. Now I was moving them around like my own personal nude pixie army. I bit my lip and bounced up and down on my heels as I considered their current formation.
It's too kitschy. If you rearrange the fanciful bric-a-brac one more time, I'm going to stake you, Andrea promised. I thought we agreed that you would get a full day's sleep before the opening.
To say I was a nervous wreck on reopening day was a massive understatement. I must have changed my outfit 10 times, which is almost painful for someone who doesn't care that much about clothes. First, I put on an embroidered blue top and some jeans and decided it looked too casual. So I changed into a red t-shirt and an Indian skirt. Too hippy-dippy. The khaki slacks and polo shirt made me look as if I worked at Best Buy. Finally, I embraced the cliché. Black slacks, black beaded top, tear-shaped carnelian earrings that looked like little drops of blood, and the black boots Andrea had practically forced me to buy at gunpoint. And then I got to the shop and immediately wanted to run home and change when I saw Andrea's crisp white blouse and beautifully cut gray slacks. Mr. Wainwright had come by and given his wholehearted support, then promptly disappeared, saying that he didn't want to make me nervous on my first day. He promised to bring Aunt Jetty back at the close of business to celebrate my entrepreneurial triumph. It was oddly lonely to have the shop open without my former employer's spectral presence. But Dick and Andrea were there for me, running last-minute errands, cleaning up last-minute messes, holding a paper bag to my face when I did some last-minute hyperventilating, the irony of the latter compounded by the fact that I didn't technically breathe. I tried to sleep, and then, despite my very specific and effective internal clock, I was lying there at noon today with a racing brain. I kept thinking, I really jumped into this without thinking it through. I said, putting the Spring Blooms fairy behind the Autumn Mystery fairy and then switching them back again. I mean, I figured I've already got a location, stock, and more capital than I needed. What else would I need for a successful business? What if I picked the wrong types of books? What if there were no bookstore specifically catering to vampires because most vampires are out living their unlives instead of reading? What if the coffee bar was a stupid idea?
Well, it was certainly a stupid idea to give you what amounted to 3 double espressos last night.
Andrea sighed, arranging pastries from Half Moon Hollow Sweets onto a fancy doily.
I knew it, I hissed at her. I knew you were slipping me extra caffeine. I thought it would be much funnier than this.
I'm so sorry my wacky antics, which you caused, no longer amuse you, I said flatly.
Call it a misguided experiment, she muttered,
tossing the pink bakery box aside and wiping down the counter. An array of muffins, cookies, and lemon bars winked out at me from the glass case, mocking my inability to digest solids. It may have seemed like a bad idea to give people sticky pastries and staining liquids, then invite them to peruse our books.
but I wanted the shop to be the sort of place where you could sit for hours at a time and feel welcome, and therefore guilty enough to buy several expensive books. As an added precaution, we'd put the rarer volumes in a glassed-in special collections case, to which I carried the only key. "We open in 10 minutes, and nobody's here yet," I said, switching the fairies back to their original position. Andrea reached over and smacked my hand. "Ow! No hitting!" I shot a significant look at her boyfriend, who was conscientiously stacking midnight blue shopping bags embossed with the new Specialty Books logo near the register. I considered it a supreme gesture of trust to allow Dick to stand that close to an unlocked cash drawer. At my indignant glare, he shrugged and slung an arm around his glaring girlfriend.
"I've seen you fight. My money's on her."
"I'm not paying you, right?" Dick shook his head. I muttered, "Good."
"Am I your first customer?"
I looked up to see my father standing in the doorway. "Daddy," I cried, throwing my arms around him and nearly bowling him over. "Yes, you are." If there was anyone who could help with my improve relationships with family goal, it was my father. I am an unabashed daddy's girl. Not like Carol Ann Musler, whose home life took on a decidedly creepy aspect after she dedicated Every Breath You Take to her father at the high school's annual talent show. But what more could I do than pledge my undying favoritism for the man who gave me my lifelong love of reading? The man who defended me from Mama and Grandma Ruthie's repeated attempts to make me into a Jenny clone. The father who loved me unconditionally despite my growing catalog of flaws. If Daddy hadn't decided to give me the unfortunate middle name of Enid, he would have been a parent without fault. Daddy stroked my hair back from my eyes.
"What's the matter, Pumpkin? Afraid no one will show up?"
I mulled that over for a millisecond. Yes, that would be it. Daddy opened his wallet and handed me his MasterCard.
"Well, point me to the coffee bar and start a tab for me, and then bring me one of those books on how to be a better parent to an adult vampire."
"Well, if you gave me a valid credit card, you've got my vote for Father of the Year." Dad took a long look at the ritual candle selection.
"Does that mean you can give me a good deal on a magic wand and an owl?"
I would respond, but we just established a store-wide no-hitting policy, I said, poking him in the ribs. He tucked a hand under my chin.
"It looks great, honey. Everything. I can tell how much work you girls put into it. I'm very proud of you."
"Thanks, Daddy. Is Mama coming?" Daddy cleared his throat.
"Mama sends her support and spirit, but Jenny had some meeting tonight and she needed Mama to babysit."
Convenient. I rolled my eyes. Behind us, the bell tinkled, and the door opened. A goth teen with a pasty face, pierced nose, and lime green over dirty blonde ringlets slumped into the store. She was a vampire, but she was so young, and she was obstinately avoiding eye contact. I took the direct approach, saying in my most pleasant tone, "Hi, welcome to Specialty Books. Can I help you find anything?" She stopped and stared at me. I think she was willing me to disappear. "Okay, then. Are you looking for something in particular or just browsing?" I asked, dialing down the cheerful factor a few points. The green-haired teen queen was now staring through me.
"I think she's pretending to be invisible," Andrea whispered from behind the counter.
I did not want to alienate my first non-blood-related customer, so I stepped out of her way. As she passed, I reached out to her, gently prying at the edges of her mind. Generally, I can't read vampires, but she seemed so new, I guess would be the word, that I wanted to see if I could get a few impressions. Instead, I was flooded with the chaos of adolescent thought bubbles. She was lonely and was afraid of what would happen if her mom found out she'd driven the family car into the worst part of town. She wished I would just leave her the hell alone so she could look for the latest Buffy Season 8 comic and read it in peace in one of those cool purple chairs. She wished she'd brought enough cash for the comic and a mocha latte because the coffee smelled pretty good and she loved, loved chocolate and missed it like crazy. She even missed her mom telling her that chocolate gave her zits. Her mom didn't talk to her much at all these days. Her whole stupid family seemed afraid of her, but they were even more afraid of kicking her out of the house. It was just great to be allowed to stay in your own room because your dad's afraid to talk to you. She didn't know why I was hassling her. It wasn't as if she was going to steal or anything. Old people always followed her around in stores because of her hair. She wished she'd never dyed it green, but then her mom made such a big deal out of it that